you could also argue that meaning is the new money. There's data that says that 9 out of 10 employees would switch jobs to take a more meaningful job, even if it paid less. And they would be willing to give up almost a quarter of their lifetime earnings for more meaningful work.
Wow. So it seems like meaningful work is pretty important. But I'm guessing you already knew that. Are you a leader who cares? Someone who wants to create a more just and compassionate workplace and community through your leadership? Then today's episode is for you. I'm Terry Schmidt, your host and leadership mentor. When I envision a just workplace, it's one where leaders know that each person has unique value and should be uplifted as such. In a just workplace, diverse individuals belong, and the unique talents of each individual are amplified and aligned with their work so that people and the organization flourish. And as you'll hear today, that has a lot to do with creating meaningful work. As a leader who cares, you probably already want to make work meaningful, but maybe you're not always sure how. You're in luck because today we're going to talk through specific research-backed ways that you can transform ordinary work into something that leads to growth, development, and improved well-being. Our guest today, Tamara Miles, is an accomplished consultant, researcher, and international speaker with over 2 decades of experience helping leaders improve business performance. She is the author of The Secret to Peak Productivity, and her clients include KPMG, Unilever, Microsoft, Google, and Best Buy. And perhaps most importantly for today, Tamara is a leading global authority on meaningful work. Her research is the first rigorous empirical study to examine the leader's impact on making work meaningful. We had a very rich conversation that I can't wait to share with you. So let's get to it. Hi, Tamara. Thanks for coming on today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Hi, Terry. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for our conversation too.
I'd like to start just learning more about you, your journey to where you are today, and particularly how you lead in your life today.
Thank you. That is a question I don't get asked often about how I lead. So I'll think about that one for a little bit, but I'll tell you quickly about my journey to where I am today. I started my career right after college in the world of advertising, and I did that for almost 10 years, and I loved it. But when I had my first child, I have 3 teenagers now, but when I had my first one, I took a little break from corporate. I was traveling a ton, and I wanted to have some time to stay home with her. But, you know, my old agencies were asking me to consult. So I started kind of consulting very informally. And from there, I started building my business, which I'm about to celebrate my 17th year in business in April. And a lot of what I started consulting on was on how to be more productive, right? Because in advertising, I manage so many timelines and clients, and I had developed systems that worked really well. And I was sharing those systems with others. From there, I ended up developing my own productivity system that was based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I ended up writing a book. It was published in 2014. And that one was all about individual productivity, a personal productivity system. And I was speaking and doing a lot of training on the system. And I started hearing, you know, at the back of the room after a training, like, oh, this is really great and I can do most of it, but, you know, I can't only check email every couple hours because in my company, the culture is such that I don't have this autonomy, or my leader doesn't let me do this, this, and that, or I can't, you know, and I was hearing the pushback about the company culture or how their managers are managing them. And so I went back to school to really look at the role of the leader in enabling people to do their best work, because people want to be productive. They want to spend their time in work that matters. But I was hearing firsthand that that wasn't happening because because of the leaders and the culture. So for the past 4 years or so, I've been studying the role of leadership in enabling people to do work that matters and be productive in that way. And so that's my journey. And the way I lead, I would say, is a combination of high expectations and high support. So one of my number one signature strengths, so that's a positive psychology tool where we can find our signature strengths. Any listener can go and find for free. It's the VIA survey of character strengths. And your top 5 to 7 are usually what we call your signature strengths. And so my top signature strength is a strength that they call love. And that's really about caring about relationships, investing in relationships, you know, getting your energy from relating to others. And that's completely true for me. And so I lead in a way that really cares for people, that they feel cared for. But I also expect a lot of them, because I do think that people rise to the challenge when you can challenge them. And I actually find this again and again in my research too.
Yeah, I was just going to say that that ties in so nicely to your current focus on meaningful work. And we'll talk about the 3 C's, but I hear them in your statement right there about how you lead.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, speaking of meaningful work, I know you mentioned that you're focusing on the role of the leader, the manager, to enable people to do their best work. How did that then go into your focus in meaningful work?
Yeah. So I went back to school. I went to the University of Pennsylvania to get a master's in applied positive psychology. I really wanted to understand, you know, meaningful work is the construct. That's the name of the term that's used when people are doing things that they feel have significance that matter, right? And so that's what I always cared about, was not productivity. The way I define productivity is not about doing more in less time. A lot of people think that's productivity.
Yeah.
Productivity is really about doing more of what matters, right? We spend so much of our time being so reactive. We're checking hundreds of emails. We are doing little tasks, but by the end of the day, we don't feel like we did anything to move our big strategic projects forward or big thinking, you know, and I really wanted to help people spend time on those things that matter. And so meaningful work ties really beautifully with that, right? My productivity model is called the peak productivity pyramid. At the top of that pyramid is a level that I call possibility. And that's what happens when you go through the first 4 levels and you're, you know, organized and you have good time management systems in place. You're planning, you're prioritizing, you're aligning the things you do with your goals. Then you get to that top level possibility. And that is really about unlocking your potential, doing things you never thought possible and all of that. And so the closest construct to that that exists in the world of positive psychology is meaningful work. And so that's how it all ties together. I went back to school to really study the role of leaders in enabling meaningful work. And we found that that wasn't really looked at very much. They, you know, there's a lot of research, a lot of giants that I stand on the shoulders of, incredible researchers that look at meaningful work. But most of the time, meaningful work is looked at from the individual perspective. Because if you think about it, meaningful work is a highly individual experience, right? What's meaningful to me is not always or not necessarily what's meaningful to you.
Right, right.
And so most of the research is on how individuals can increase their own sense of meaning at work through practices like job crafting and you know, connecting what you do to the impact that it has and things like that. And these are all great. But I was really curious about, like, what is the role of the leader? And so my good friend and partner, Wes Adams, and I, we joined forces in graduate school and we started this research that we're still conducting. And I believe it's the first research that looks at specific practices that leaders are doing to unlock meaning.
Such important work, because as listeners of this podcast will know, you know, I believe so deeply in the power of the leader to influence the lives of those that work for them, that work with them. And I love your definition of productivity as well, because I think sometimes we do just think of it as doing more, but doing more of what matters is so important, you know, and the way that prioritization factors into that. And, you know, one of my pet peeves is when people say that they don't have the time to do something.
That is one of my, that's actually how I closed my book is with this, you know, I don't have time is such a cop-out. Mm-hmm. And I close my productivity workshops in my book with this challenge for people to not use the phrase, I don't have time, and instead go a level deeper. And what are you really trying to say? You know, when I have friends who are like, oh, you read so much, I'm trying to read more, but I don't have time. And I challenge mm-hmm. them to say, you know, we all have the same amount of time. Everyone is busy. People have full lives. So, you know, you can say things like reading is not a priority for me right now. Yeah. Or, you know, I'm choosing to spend my time in different ways, because mm-hmm. really time management is choice management. We all have a lot more things to do, things that people want us to do, things we want to do, you know, than time to do them in. And so it's about choosing the right things to do in the time that we have. And time is really the greatest common denominator. Mm-hmm. We all have the exact same amount of time, no matter how rich or poor or senior leader or just starting your career, no matter who you are, we all have the same exact amount of time. So it is about the choices we make in the time that we have. And that's why I think productivity is about doing more of what matters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we think about the 80-20 rule, right? 20% of the things we do bring us 80% of our results. Mm-hmm. But we spend most of our time tackling the 80%, the disruptions, the distractions, you know, and what would it be like if mm-hmm. we could really identify and focus on the 20%?
Yeah. And the leader can do so much in enabling that.
So much, so much. Absolutely. And I mean, to go back to what you were saying, that you know, you and your listeners really believe that the leaders have such a big impact mm-hmm. in the employee experience, but in specifically the experience of meaning at work.
Well, it is. And it's twofold in a way that the leader has to focus on making their own work meaningful, as well as setting up the structures and building the relationships that help to make the work meaningful for others as well. So I'm excited to dig into this conversation. We're so aligned, but I'd love to hear what you say to maybe a leader who isn't convinced yet that he or she needs to focus on making work meaningful. Why is it important for a leader to be concerned about that?
That's a great question. And, there's so much I can talk about. We could finish the episode just talking about this. So I'm trying to choose like the most pointed data that I would say. So I guess we can start very quickly looking at data from the Great Resignation, mm-hmm. right? We saw this wave of people, unprecedented numbers leaving work. And when you look at why people were leaving, it, you know, leaders started throwing in more pay, higher perks, and these were all great and important, but these are table stakes. The reason why people left was because they didn't feel like they belonged and they didn't feel like their leader cared about them, you know? And so if you're a leader who cares about retention, meaningful work is highly tied to retention. If you're a leader who cares about productivity, about engagement, about well-being or fulfillment, I mean, these are all factors that come directly from the experience of meaningful work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could also argue that meaning is the new money. There's data that says that 9 out of 10 employees would switch jobs, you know, to take a more meaningful job, even if it paid less. Mm-hmm. And they would be willing to give up almost a quarter of their lifetime earnings for more meaningful work.
That says a lot.
Doesn't it say a lot? And then, you know, for leaders who are still like not convinced, I would just ask them to reflect on a time that work felt meaningful for mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. How did that feel like? You know, why was it special? What felt meaningful? And then reflect on a time that work just felt like drudgery and mm-hmm. that you dreaded waking up on mm-hmm. Mondays. And what's the difference in the experience? How did you show up? Were you more energized? Were you, you know, and that's how your employees feel too.
Right. And I love that, personalizing it and asking them to really think about the whole experience. Like you said, you know, how did you show up at work? How productive were you there? How effective were your results? But also, what did it do to your well-being? What did it do to your relationships outside of work on Absolutely. Both sides, when it was meaningful and when it wasn't?
Yeah. I mean, there's research on network effects, social contagion, right? It shows that when we are happier, our friends' friends become happier. It's 3 degrees of separation. Our emotions are contagious. Mm-hmm. And so when we experience meaning at work, we're much more likely to experience higher sense of meaning in life. But also we come home, we bring work home with us, and we're all working from home, but mm-hmm. you know, work affects our personal life and it affects the way we show up for our families, our communities. I mean, I really truly believe that work and our workplaces can be an engine for community well-being. It can be a force for well-being. And I think it is through the power of network effects.
That's so interesting. And even if you had a leader who, hopefully there aren't leaders like this out there, but even if you had a leader who wasn't concerned about that and wasn't concerned about the effect on those closest to him or her, as well as the community, I think the research, like you mentioned, shows that it just helps your business to thrive as well when you can find that meaning, as well as help others to find that meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for leaders who are not, who don't care, you know, mm-hmm. who might not think that it's important for community well-being, and they just really kind of want to go back to the bottom line mm-hmm. and their own results. Sean Aker has this quote that I love, that is, your brain at happy is 30% more productive than at negative or neutral, right? And so when we experience work as meaningful, we are much more fulfilled in our career. We tend to be much more energized, engaged, we're happier at work, and mm-hmm. we can be much more engaged and productive when we are happier and more fulfilled at work.
Right. Right. Yeah. We've talked in the past episodes as well about Gallup's research on well-being and career well-being, you know, being the driver of the other four elements. So
absolutely.
Audience is definitely familiar with that. So I'm convinced, although I was convinced when we started off, but hopefully those leaders out there who may feel this is a little woo-woo or, you know, not related to the bottom line, are convinced that there is hard data out there that even if you're only concerned about the bottom line, focusing on creating meaningful work for your team members is a worthwhile investment of time.
Absolutely. And you know, what I find with the leaders I train and talk to and speak to is not that they need to be convinced that meaningful work matters. Most of them know that it matters because they've had their own experiences. Mm-hmm. They just don't know how to make work meaningful. So when we were embarking on our research, one of the mentors that we spoke with is Tom Rath. Mm-hmm. He's the bestselling author of StrengthsFinder 2.0 mm-hmm. and multiple mm-hmm. bestselling books. And he told us, he's like, yeah, leaders don't need to be convinced that, you know, to make work meaningful. They don't need to be convinced that meaningful work matters. They all know this. They just don't know how. And so he was really excited that we were launching this study to find out specifically how. And so hopefully your listeners are of the same mindset, that they know they are all in. They just need to know, like, how do I do this?
Yeah, which is an excellent transition into the next question I was going to ask you, because, you know, we do have a lot of new people, leaders listening to this podcast, that maybe it's their first time in role. They are dealing with all the challenges of moving from an individual contributor to a leader and everything that comes with that, and all the tasks, all the learning that is on their to-do list.
How do they get started with, from the get-go, focusing on creating meaningful work?
Oh, what a great place to be in. It's starting yes. as a new people leader. So congratulations. And, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Yes. What an honor to be leading people and a gift, I think. And for those new people leaders who really want to lead with meaning and put meaning front and center, I would say you can focus on what we call the three C's of meaningful work. So through our research, we identified 26 specific leadership practices that fall under six main domains. And that's what our academic paper will be all about. And it's really exciting. But we, so Wes and I really wanted to take all this data and all these practices and create a framework that would be actionable and easy for leaders to remember. Mm-hmm. So we came up with the three C's framework. And so the three C's of meaningful work are contribution. And that's the one that most people think of when they think of meaningful work, right? They think meaningful work. So meaningful work and purpose are terms that are used interchangeably, but they mean different things. Purpose is a part of meaningful work, but it's not the whole story. Mm-hmm. So contribution is the part that includes purpose. Basically, it's answering the question, how does what I do matters, right? Mm-hmm. And so things leaders can do to increase the sense of contribution is tell stories. Storytelling is a really powerful tool. So leaders can be story collectors and storytellers of people's impact. And it can be external impact, can be, you know, how does your role affect our consumer? You know, the people that are buying our product or that are using our services. But it could also be internal contribution, peer gratitude, appreciation, saying thank you, saying how what they did this week helped you as their leader do other things. And so really highlighting the stories of contribution and impact is a great way to increase the meaning through contribution. Yeah. The second C is community. We really, as humans, have this very strong need to belong. And so community is all about building belonging. And there's many ways to do that. One is to foster amity at work. So create places for people to connect. Amity is a different word for friendship. We created the three A's of belonging. And so amity, you know, works very well. Right. But creating opportunities for people to connect on a personal level. Some stories from our research include things like volunteering together or, you know, trivia. People did like a lot of trivia over Zoom. So it can be simple and low cost activities like that, but it could also be through shared interests and shared values. You can build belonging through, and that's the other A, the pathway is alignment. So alignment, belonging to a community of shared values creates instant trust, creates instant belonging, right? And so amity is one A, alignment is the other way. And the other one is authenticity. And that one is really about creating the psychological safety so people can show up fully and engage authentically, you know, where their ideas can be heard. And that really, really increases inclusion, right? Because a lot of leaders are rightfully focused on DEI initiatives, right? And diversity is great. So like having a more diverse pool of people is great, but without the psychological safety for them to express who they are, express their ideas and opinions, it's not enough. The way to build belonging is to be inclusive, right? Yeah. Is to include people, to ask for their ideas, ask for their feedback, ask who disagrees. Mm-hmm. What am I missing? What are my blind spots? One practice that the CEO of Paycheck uses is no one speaks twice until everyone speaks once. So in his meetings, he has this practice, and that's such a beautiful way, simple, to create inclusion, right? So that's the community building buckets, really front and center with creative belonging and strengthening relationships and the social connections at work. And then the third C is challenge. And that's kind of where we started when I was talking about the kind of leader I am. And challenge is really about giving people opportunities for growth and development. But beyond that is about uncovering potential in people that they may not even see themselves yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a facilitator training a couple years ago, and there were 15 of us in the group. And the lead trainer asked us to take a few minutes and reflect on someone who's a mentor who meant a lot to you and why. Mm-hmm. And so we all reflected, and then the 15 of us shared our stories. And what really stood out to me is how many of us mentioned a leader who gave us a really challenging assignment that we were kind of secretly freaking out about, like total imposter syndrome, you know, like, oh my gosh, I don't think I can do this. Why did they pick me? But then they believe in you so much and give you the right support that you want to prove them right. Right? You want to rise to the challenge, and you got it done. And those moments like really stuck with us. I mean, we were remembering stories from decades ago that really changed the way we see ourselves, the way we see our abilities. And so challenge is about that, about uncovering people's potential, about treating every employee as a high potential individual, right? Organizations have these practices of having their high potential pools of employees, and it's usually like 5 to 10% of employees. That means that 90 to 95% of people are in this zone of wasted potential that we're not working hard to uncover who they could become.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's my personal favorite C.
Yeah, that's an excellent point that I honestly hadn't thought of to this point. The, you know, taking 5 to 10% of your employee base and saying these are the high potentials. Well, what about everybody else?
Exactly. And the research on burnout shows that the single biggest cause of burnout is not just because we're working too hard or too long. It's because we're working too hard or too long without feeling our own personal growth and development.
Yeah.
And so it's sad. It is. And I think that, you know, for new leaders out there to be like looking for people's strengths, like one way to uncover this potential is to give people some kind of strengths assessment and play to their strengths, give them opportunities to use their strengths at work. Research shows that when we have the opportunity to use our strengths at work, we're 18 times more likely to be flourishing than when we don't. Right. But also having development conversations that are not performance review conversations, separate from that. And, you know, leading with curiosity and asking questions and trying to find those right assignments that people can develop their skills and grow and contribute to the organization.
So much that we could unpack there and dig into and talk for much longer than we have time to talk today. But yeah, so we have the three C's, we have the contribution, community, and challenge. Just a couple of points as you were talking that came to mind with regards to contribution. I know you and I went back and forth a little bit talking about the generational differences in terms of, you know, what does it mean for someone who is maybe in the baby boomer generation as compared to someone who is in Gen Z in terms of them feeling like they made a contribution. I think the article that you shared with me talks about, you know, I believe it was the baby boomer generation was all about goal achievement. And so contribution, yes, you want to help them understand how their specific work contributes to the work of the organization, but also get more granular about this goal contributes to the accomplishment of this objective, which relates to the accomplishment of this organizational objective, as opposed to another generation where it may be about what contribution am I making to the work of the organization, but more importantly, is the organization making to the greater community?
Right. Absolutely. Yes. And that's where the individual differences come in. And you used one of my favorite words, which is like getting granular, right? Mm-hmm. So we said that a meaningful work is a highly individual experience. There's obviously themes, but you're right. What's meaningful for a Gen Zer is not necessarily the same thing that's meaningful for a baby boomer, but you know, below the waterline of the iceberg, mm-hmm. like it is about contribution, because mm-hmm. whether you're a baby boomer or a Gen Zer, you want to know how what you do matters. Mm-hmm. And so contribution is answering that question. How mm-hmm. is it that what I'm doing here every day matters? And it could be, how does it matter to my own personal growth, to my own development, to my own goal achievement? How does it matter to the organization's bottom line, to the organization's mm-hmm. goals and impacts? How does it matter to the community, to my peers, right? So there's many ways of answering that question, but it really is about how is it that what I do here matters.
It all boils down to that. And I think the fun of being a leader is figuring out with each of your team members what matters most to them and what is going to feel like a contribution to them. What do exactly. I want to highlight when we're having these conversations about work that's assigned?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, one really interesting data about the generational divide is that every generation, when asked by researchers, every generation highly values meaningful work, right? So they personally mm-hmm. value meaningful work, but they think that the other generations are only in it for the money. And so it's really interesting that the research shows that not only does every generation value meaningful work, but they define it very similarly, right? And so what we find is that making work meaningful is really a strategy that can bridge the generational uh-huh. divide, right? Because we do hear from a lot of the leaders we work with, like, oh my goodness, I feel like I'm speaking a different language. Like, I don't understand, mm-hmm. you know, the new generation. And that's been true, I think, for
it has
forever. But the good news is that meaningful work is a basic human mm-hmm. need and motivation, mm-hmm. right? And so it can help leaders bridge the generational divide. Yeah,
that's another added benefit, definitely. And then with regards to community, loved your four A's. And we actually just had an episode where we were talking about emotional intelligence and in particularly how it's used by those who have been historically marginalized and how that can almost, some of those skills can be used almost in a way that negatively impacts their well-being. So I love the idea of tying in meaningful work with the community and creating that psychological safety, which is another upcoming episode that we have. So love that aligns. And then with Absolutely. Regards to the challenge, my background way back is in education, and I just keep hearing like the zone of proximal development. So that sweet spot where, you know, it's just challenging enough to motivate you.
Yeah.
But your leader is also providing what we would call like the scaffolding to support you in that.
Absolutely. So you must be very familiar then, if you have a background in education, with the research on the Pygmalion effect. Mm-hmm. So it's how, you know, teachers, I think the research started, it was mostly done with students in, mm-hmm. you know, academic, but also elementary school settings. And now there's Pygmalion effect research done with leaders and organizations. But basically, in the 1960s, Bob Rosenthal, a researcher, snuck into his lab in the middle of the night and labeled half of his rats smart and the other half dumb. Right. So he just did that. And there was no rhyme or reason. It was totally random, but he just wanted to see what happens. And they were all the exact same rats, but he just labeled smart and dumb. And then the next day, when his assistants came in, he had them, you know, he said, oh, okay, you know, these are our smart rats and these are our dumb rats. And we're going to put them through some puzzles and see who mm-hmm. does better. And the results weren't even close. The smart rats performed so much better than the dumb rats. And he couldn't even publish his study because nobody would believe him. And so what he ended up concluding is that the small behaviors of the researchers towards the smart rats and the expectations that they had actually changed the way that the rats performed, which is amazing. It's amazing.
The power of a leader.
Isn't it? And so then they did that study with students. They would start the school year and they would tell a teacher, like, these kids have very high IQ. And it was randomly selected. They all had like average, you know, IQs. But by the end of the school year, they would measure again with tests. And those kids' growth was statistically significant, much higher than the other kids. Right. And so it's this power of high expectations that we can apply to leading. So when leaders have these high expectations of you, they're acting in ways that kind of prove those high expectations, ways that make those expectations come true. And so that's why, by only focusing on 5% of high performing you know, individuals, we are wasting so much opportunity.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And that brought a couple of things to mind. You know, you talked about how helpful it is for leaders to give some sort of strengths assessment, whether that be Clifton Strengths or VIA or Pat Lencioni's Working Genius, how helpful that can be. I think because it can erase those smart and dumb labels that, you know, may have been assigned to the person based on just what culture says is a good worker or is a good team member, because you can identify that everyone does have certain strengths. And when you lean into those, even for yourself, when you lean into those and focus on feeding those, that's when your work becomes meaningful. That's when you have the energy. That's when you can excel in the way that you were designed to excel.
Absolutely. And the other thing I think that it does is it creates a shared language, you know, for the team, for the organization, right? If everybody has this shared language of strengths and can strengths spot each other, it's a upward spiral of good, of performance, of feeling connected, of feeling seen, right? But of developing strengths. The research on strengths shows that it's better for us to further develop our signature strengths. So to continue using and growing our current strengths than to try to develop a lower strengths. I mean, both can be done, but for a shorter term boost of well-being, of energy, of getting better at something, of growth, it's better to focus on further developing our signature strengths.
Yeah, definitely. And the other story that your comments brought to mind was just, you know, one of the most meaningful pieces of feedback that I've gotten is from someone I coached who said, you know, you made me believe I was capable of more than I thought I was.
Oh, and
I think, you know, any leader wants to hear that. And if we can work on structuring work and really knowing our people and knowing their strengths so that we can help craft that meaningful work, or like an article you just shared on LinkedIn, help them reflect so that they can look back and see how their work was meaningful.
Yeah.
You can have an immense impact.
What a beautiful feedback you received. Yes. Great. That's amazing.
Yeah. I treasure that. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the power of reflection is really, really incredible for meaningful work, you know, because often we don't feel that something's meaningful in the moment. Like sometimes we do. Sometimes we have this experience where we get an email expressing the impact that you had. And in that moment, you're like, wow, like that's so meaningful. But often meaning comes from struggle, right?
True.
And so when we're struggling to complete this project that, you know, this high expectation project that was given to us, in the moment, we're kind of figuring things out, we're learning, and we don't feel it. But looking back and reflecting on it is when we truly feel how much we've grown,
yeah,
or how amazing that was that, you know, everybody came together to help you, or whatever it was that mm-hmm. made it meaningful for you. And this ties a little bit, I think, to the research on parenting mm-hmm. and, you know, meaningfulness. When they ask parents, you know, they did the research where parents carry around like a beeper. Mm-hmm. And then every now and then they get beeped and says, how happy are you right now on a scale of like 0 to 10 or 0 to 5? Mm-hmm. I don't remember. And, you know, what they found is that parents are a lot less happy than non-parents, right? Mm-hmm. In the moment to moment, because mm-hmm. parenting is often hard when you have little kids, you're not sleeping well, you're dealing with tantrums, and you have teenagers, you're worried about, I don't know, college or drugs or big mm-hmm. things. So it's often not pleasant in the mm-hmm. moment, but later reflecting on it, or even like maybe just a little bit later that night when you're thinking about the day and reflect, it is so meaningful, right? Mm-hmm. So parenting is a deeply meaningful experience, but not always happy mm-hmm. compared to non-parents is what the research finds. And I think that applies to meaningful work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because parenting, gosh, what meaningful work? What impact are you having somebody's yeah. life? You're like raising a human being, right?
Right.
It's really meaningful, but not always pleasant. And I think meaningful work sometimes is like that too.
Yeah. What a great point. You know, it's making your work meaningful is not about being happy all the time at work. It is
absolutely.
It is more about those three C's that you were talking about. So thanks for calling that out. That's, mm-hmm. I think, probably a myth that is out there that
yeah.
if your work's meaningful, you're gonna, you know, be all smiles all day long.
No. And, you know, something else that I forgot to highlight earlier that I think is really important to note is that meaningful work really lies at the intersection of the three C's, mm. even if one of the C's is super high, but you're missing the other two, mm-hmm. work's not going to feel meaningful. And one example is we have clients who are in the social impact nonprofit mm-hmm. world, mm-hmm. and that deeply meaningful, like deeply mm-hmm. impactful work, right? So you know the impact you're making on the day-to-day. You're often meeting with the people who you're impacting, but they were not high on the community bucket when we mm-hmm. first started working mm-hmm. with them. People were not feeling a sense of belonging. They were not feeling like their voice was heard. They were not feeling valued, like they were just another cog in the machine mm-hmm. and easily replaceable. Mm-hmm. And we worked with them, with the leaders and with the whole team to increase the C of the community bucket so that everybody could experience meaningful work. And so they were super, super high on contribution, but very, very low on community, and work wasn't meaningful. And yeah. so it's really important for leaders to focus on all three.
What a great call out. I won't go into it now, but definitely have personal experience to the same effect when yeah. one was very high and the other two weren't there. And that led to me feeling unfulfilled. So
yeah.
that's a great point. Speaking about the social impact space kind of relates to the next question. I did see in a recent article that you did in Fast Company about how to make workplaces anti-toxic, which I love that term, by the way, but you wrote that there is no institution with more power to change the world than our workplaces. And I believe that also, but I'd love to hear what you meant by that and give us a little bit more granularity around that.
Oh, sure. So I deeply believe that, and for a few different reasons. One is that we spend about a third of our lives mm-hmm. at work, right? And we talked about network effects. We talked about how we bring what's happening at work home. We also bring what's happening at home to work. But shouldn't that third of our day, a third of our lives mean something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, shouldn't we be able to not just make money to, you know, to live and be able to enjoy our lives, but also make friends, make progress, mm-hmm. learn, grow, develop, all those things? And so I believe that they're not mutually exclusive and that you can experience work as meaningful while also fulfilling obligations that you have. The other piece of why I believe that is that, you know, Edelman does like a trust barometer every year. And what they're finding is that work is the institution that people trust the most right now. They trust workplaces more than government or other institutions. And so, and it's not like we fully trust our leaders in workplaces. The numbers aren't stellar, but they're still higher than other institutions. And so there's power there. Like if people are trusting our workplaces, you know, they should kind of fulfill that social contract too. And help become engines of well-being. And then finally, I think one of the silver linings of COVID was this call for well-being in our workplaces. Life became really integrated as we all joined each other's homes and saw what was happening. And that was kind of nice. We were able to connect more personally, but we lost our boundaries of work and life if we had them before. And, you know, of course, we lived through a pandemic and economic crisis and all kinds of things. And so our well-being really, really suffered. Burnout increased and for the first time ever, Vivek Murthy, who's the U.S. Surgeon General, put out a report calling for workplaces to become engines of societal well-being and change. And that's hugely significant that there's this call. And he put together a great framework. And in that framework, there's a big call for meaning and meaningful work. And so I do think that we are like staring at this precipice of possibility, of change, of like workplaces becoming all that they can become to help us flourish, to help humans, you know, become more fulfilled, become more engaged. So Marty Seligman, who is the founder of the field of positive psychology and who I love and admire and as a mentor, he called for everyone in positive psychology. His big vision is to have 51% of the population in the world flourishing by 2051. And that's a big vision. We are not there yet, and we're not even really close to being there yet. But I believe that the way that we can get there is by making our workplaces engines of well-being.
Yeah.
I think if we can all feel fulfilled at work, we're going to bring that home and we're going to be fulfilled in life.
Yeah. And the research shows that. And like we talked about earlier, the network effect, I mean, just imagine where it can go. That's why Stronger to Serve is so focused on creating just and compassionate workplaces through leadership, because we do spend so much time there, and you know, there's so much focus in our world on what happens in our workplaces, and it drives so much. So if we can make those places where people are flourishing, I'm excited about the impact.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I have so enjoyed this conversation. And like I said, I would love to dig in deeper to so many of the topics, but I want to be respectful of your time. So I'd love to just close with where people can learn more about you and your work if they want to connect with you. Where's the best place for them to go?
Well, thank you so much, Terry. This was a great conversation. It sounds like we are very aligned and that we are both doing everything we can to make Marty's vision a reality. The best place for people to connect with me is on LinkedIn. I am often there posting. That's where I share my latest articles and, you know, latest research and latest thinking to help leaders become the kind of leaders that lead with meaning. And so I would love to connect with your listeners there. So if anybody is on LinkedIn and wants to connect with me, I would love to.
Great. Great. Well, we'll make sure the direct link to your LinkedIn gets included in the show notes so that it's easy to find. And again, I just want to say thank you for your time today. Thank you for the work that you are doing. I'm excited to continue following it and continue interacting with you.
Thank you so much. Me too.
What a great conversation. How will you work on creating the three C's for your team? Follow me on LinkedIn to share your next steps and to get ideas from others. And until next time, lead with this quote by Jim Collins in mind. It is very difficult to have a meaningful life without meaningful work.